Hello, and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I am a writer, actor, and comedian. You might know me from Welcome to Flatch on Fox. Our guest today is Niles Abston. He has had success as a stand-up comedian, a writer, and a filmmaker. In stand-up, he was named a 2024 Netflix Is a Joke Festival headliner after having Comedy Central's most viral stand-up bit of 2022 and being named a Vulture magazine comedian to watch. As a writer, his season three episode of FX's Dave was named one of The Hollywood Reporter's 10 best TV episodes of 2023, and his 2022 directorial debut, Notice to Quit, was named by Vulture magazine as the best comedy short we've seen in the past couple of years. He recently starred in and produced the award-winning short film 98 Honda that won Top Comedy at HaHa Fest and has been officially selected by Montclair Film Festival and Bushwick Film Festival. Niles is currently a writer on season four of Dan Harmon's animated series Crapopolis on Fox. Hello.
Hi. I didn't know you were going to ask me
Yeah,
that.
you sent
That's funny.
it.
That's funny. I
Why
appreciate it.
not? Of course. I mean, just an amazing biography and another Fox person. It's all good.
Yeah, Fox family. That's what's up.
Our book today is from 1884, Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
Yes.
I just wanted to talk a tiny bit about 1884, because it's post-Civil War. It's set in the 1830s, pre-Civil War. Kind of the world, Alaska just becomes a U.S. territory for the first time. You're from Mississippi, right?
I am.
So Mississippi actually establishes the first U.S. state college for women.
That was just like, let's see if we can get all the women in one place. Like, that's what that sounded like.
Exactly. Yeah. But there's some crazy things, like there's the first roller coaster in the world on Coney Island.
People were trusting roller coasters in 1884. Fuck that.
It's something like the first like intentional roller coaster. It's
Okay.
very creepy the way we learned that. And first Christian missionary arrives in Korea. Dark, not good.
God.
The 8-hour work week is established. That's May Day, the first May Day.
Okay.
And catcher Moses Walker is acknowledged as the first African American to play Major League Baseball with the Toledo Blue Stockings.
Nice.
That was pretty
I know
nice.
who that is. Let's go.
I thought that was pretty cool. Our book today is Huckleberry Finn, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. What's your story with this book? How did it come into your life the first time?
Well, it was required reading for me in the ninth grade, and reading that book in Mississippi is hilarious. Honestly, I do have a stand-up bit from my last special about it, because like basically like every black kid I know was having to like read that book in like ninth or 10th grade, and the book says the N-word a lot, and so if you're like one of the few black kids in the room, it's just like a very awkward thing. And so like I remember. Like some teachers, like they're like I know, like I remember, like for the bit, like I asked like different people that I grew up with, like what did your teacher do? Because like I remember my teacher specifically. There's this white lady named Miss Waller, and Miss Waller was like very like just nervous all the time, and she was like really weird, and she kind of like overcorrected, and so instead of the N-word, she would have everybody say African American, and I was just kind of like. Well, that's not what they meant by that. So I don't know if that's what we should be saying. And like at 14, like I knew that. And then I know some people, their teacher just like, just say it, it's in the book, you know? So it's just like very, just to like, in a, especially like in a place like where I'm from, that like that book, reading that book in the ninth grade. And I feel like because of all the theatrics around it and the language in the book, that I don't really think I retained a lot of the themes and like what it's really about. But like going back and like reading it now, like I definitely was like, oh shit, like this dude's a genius. Like I see you, like I now see what Mark Twain was doing with this book.
Yeah, I read it also in ninth grade. I don't really remember anything about it other than I didn't like it, and I think that was mostly because I didn't like anything. It was
I didn't
very
really.
judgmental. And the only other thing I remember is like I remember we had biology first period, and this kid came in, and we were talking about, what was the homework last night, what was in the reading, and he pulls out his book, issued from the school, and it was tattered. Like I'd never seen a book so destroyed. And I go, what happened? He goes, a truck ran over my backpack.
It's a great excuse.
Exactly. And so that was all I remembered was that. And I think our teacher was on maternity leave, and so it just sort of fell through the cracks. But I was also in Maryland, like right outside DC. So completely different environment where everyone, there was a lot of overcorrecting, like you said. Everyone was really trying to talk about like one of the most diverse places in America. And so I like, it's a complete blind spot. I have no idea really how we talked about it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things of just like it. I think it's a book that would be tough for a white adult in the 2000s to explain to children, because maybe I don't even think they really even understand what the book is really about or their views on race. They just know you shouldn't say this word, and if like that's the only like knowledge you really have, then the themes of this book are probably a little complicated to explain to children.
Yeah, I was trying to sort of throughout reading it figure out like why do we ask kids to read this book, right? Because I feel like in a lot of this podcast, I feel like a lot of the books that we did like read in high school were beyond like our capability or just I feel like asking a lot of like 13, 14-year-olds. And I think I remember sort of the narrative around this book being like, it's written in vernacular English, which is huge. It was, one of the first things to do that. The other thing I think is like, well, obviously it talks about race. And I think it sort of felt like, was this the only book that existed that came out of that century to talk about race? It was sort of like, why is this the one? But you said you were really startled to revisit it. Can you talk about that? Like what, I think what's stuck out the most to you in this reading?
Just kind of the themes behind it, and just kind of like realizing like what he was doing with it. Like I've of course everybody says Mark, that word is thrown around genius a lot. Like Mark Twain's a genius, you know, he has a award named after him. But like I like going back and like reading about it and reading it like kind of made me realize like how much of a genius he really was, because he was writing this book during the Reconstruction era in America. And what like a lot of people don't understand with like the Reconstruction era was nothing was really constructed. Like they burned the South down during the Civil War, and like, yeah, they defeated the Confederates and like slavery stopped or whatever you want to call it. But there was poor people that lived in the South that didn't own slaves, and also all these black people that now had to figure out what to do next, and the South is essentially just burned down. And so like the South as a region of the country technically has never healed from the Civil War and all the destruction, because most of the destruction happened in the South, not in the northern part of the country. So like the East Coast and the Midwest and everything was kind of able to just go like nothing really happened afterwards. Whereas like the South had all these dead people everywhere. They had to bury all these people. They had to rebuild all these buildings, schools, hospitals, banks, all these things that Sherman and all these generals had burned down. And so it was like a really frustrating time in America because so many people were poor too. And I think black people became like the scapegoat for a lot of these things of like, oh, they would have never come down here and burned it down if it wasn't for black people. But it was just like, well, black people didn't bring themselves here and then own themselves, you know? So I feel like black
Yeah.
people became like a scapegoat. And so Mark Twain is living during this era. And so to write a book set before the Civil War about this little white kid that doesn't know much about the world except the fact that he just doesn't want to live with these two women that are making him do all these things he doesn't want to do, and he sees the hypocrisy in the way that they live, because they own a slave, and then to make a story about him running away with this slave and then helping him to get free is crazy, because it's like at a time like he realized that, like especially like I've noticed this in a lot of like white men that I've worked with in the industry and just like other white guys that I know, is like it's kind of hard for them to dig into a story, watch a movie, read a book if they're not centered in it. Like a white guy has to be the main character. Like you talk to a white dude, Goodfellas and Pulp Fiction are the only two movies that ever exist, right? And it's just like those are good movies, but like there's other movies with women and Asian people and black people that exist that do those same things, but like it doesn't matter because they're not centered in the movie, so they can't even focus. And so he wrote this book, this amazing book, where a little white boy is technically the hero. So like he could teach white kids these lessons and themes and morals and principles in a spoon-fed way through this funny thing, because he also has the kid talking like they would talk. And like I liken that to like rap music, like mixtape rap music. When it comes out, it's like the older generation doesn't get it, the industry doesn't get it, but all these kids love this music. So all right, fuck it, we have to reproduce this kind of music. And so in a way, he also created like a new genre of literature with people writing things in a first person in a character's voice. And so the dude was just so smart. And I do think, I was joking earlier, I think he made some people like a little racist just by reading this book.
Yeah, it really surprised me just because I think like the I got whiplash from the different tones of it because I thought it was in the first couple chapters before Jim really enters, it's sort of like Hardy Boys almost. It's really adventurous and fun with the N-word 5 times on every page, which was a lot. And I think it's like it has a feeling of like Forrest Gump, I think, in terms of the it's adventure after adventure. It kind of there's a kind of a not a lack of logic, but a lack of connection, and things just kind of happen. He's on the Mississippi. But you're right, there is this sort of I think the most impressive thing to me is this distinction that Huck has to learn. And there's a lot of Huck sort of trying to make things make sense, that just because something is legal doesn't mean it's moral. I think that was
Exactly.
metal for an author to read, and I don't think any of us really got that in
No,
ninth
because
grade.
it wasn't explained that way. Because I mean,
Yeah.
I can't for your educators, but the people that ran my school weren't the I was smarter than them while I was at the school. So it's just like I didn't have someone that could really break down the themes in this book because they didn't understand race or anything like that. And just like the
Yeah.
themes of just very much just like Huck is this kid that things happening around him culturally, like having to go to church and pray and all this other type of stuff doesn't make sense to him. And he doesn't want to do it. Like he calls it like they're trying to civilize me or whatever. And so it's just like that he does he's trying to break free from that and leave. And so that's why he's able to eventually understand why this slave is Jim is trying to leave as well. And so like the parallel between them on the adventure is like really interesting.
Yeah. Twain is so good at creating those contrasts because both Huck and Jim are running away, and yet every other circumstance is different. Everything about how Huck is received by the world is so different from Jim, and Huck slowly starts to learn that. I think there's every time that Huck gets caught, you know, there's an early section where he pretends to be a girl. Every single time people go, "Oh, well, I understand. Like that makes sense. Of course. I'll give you this and that and help you." And for Jim, it is without exaggeration life and death. I think Jim is such an interesting, wonderful character, like a very good person. And what's crazy is I am in a book club, and the book this month is James by Percival Everett. Do you know about this book? It came out this year.
I do not.
It is Huckleberry Finn through Jim's eyes. So it is like exactly beat for beat the same story. And I borrowed it on Libby on the library app, and it became available the day I finished this book. Bizarre. And I really am enjoying it. I have like 2 hours left on the audiobook, but it's a fascinating, fantastic book. And it obviously does a really good job of like bringing humanity to Jim. And you get to see all of the same experiences. Like there's this moment very early on where Jim is sort of like doing a magical spell with this ball of hair. And in the alternative version, in Everett's version, you get to see him sort of say, like, well, the white kids really get a kick out of it when I do this. A repeated thing is that Jim, you know, can speak the same way every white person can, but teaches the children on the property how to, quote, talk like a slave in order to not threaten the white people, in order to survive. And there are moments where he slips up and he's like, oh no, Huck knows that something is different. Huck knows that I sound different here.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I really like it.
That's
Yeah.
amazing. It's called James.
James, yeah, for Jim. Yeah.
Okay. That's
Yeah.
interesting. I might have to check that out.
I really, really recommend it. I haven't finished it yet, but it's really great. And I think like something frustrating about this book is that Jim does just disappear for a lot of sections. And so it fills in what he's doing there. Like right now, the section I'm in, he's with a minstrel group and having to put on white face and then black face over it to get into the theater that he has to perform in. It's just I really recommend it. And it's like, what a great coincidence that those things happened at the same time for me. Yeah.
Interesting.
And I think, like you're saying, Twain is really good at putting these really divisive ideas in a children's book, putting the logic there for Huck to work out. And to, I think, like, yeah, to make everyone happy however they see it. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole minstrel show thing is like very like interesting to me because like that's essentially like how American comedy was created, and like it's crazy to me that like things history repeats itself, that like comedy was created literally to just like for white people to make fun of black people in a way, and like that was the only way, that was the only thing they knew how to make fun of, so that was like their first, that was like the first version of like live performance comedy was making fun of black stereotypes and everything.
Yeah. Which is also interesting because I feel like when I've been taught the history of comedy, it starts with vaudeville, as if there wasn't something before vaudeville.
Yeah, it's conveniently left out. And then I think I mean in certain, and I've definitely talked to like other people about this, but like, and then another layer of comedy is completely left out of like who was the white person that saw something that was just like, oh, this is hilarious, we need to make fun of it. And so like a lot of people do believe that like slaves essentially on the plantation created like what is the first like kind of steps of stand-up comedy, which is like late at night in front of everybody, you would stand up and you would tell like a funny story to the other slaves to keep spirits high. Like at night, that's what they would do. And so like it's probably believed that like some white people that either worked on the plantation or families just like maybe would sneak around and watch them tell these stories to each other. And then the way that they would like retell it to other white people, they obviously would like drum things up and do these stereotypical things and like play with their lips and make them bigger. And like that's how like the blackface thing started, because you as a person, like you wouldn't just automatically just come up with like, let's paint our faces black and put these white lips on and pretend to be black. Like you would have to go like actually see something. And so that means they probably saw black people performing to each other and didn't get the things they were saying culturally, so it was funny to them.
Right. There was in I was listening to I was trying to finish this audiobook before we recorded and didn't quite get to it. But there is like there's a moment where they say, you know, the minstrel show is doing a cakewalk. And Jim says, no, we do that to make fun of them. Are they getting that? And they say, no, they don't understand that like that black people are capable of irony. It just doesn't occur to them.
Yeah, if you don't know as a person, then you don't get it. It's like when women will say something like sarcastic on the internet, and then all these dudes will come and comment under it and be like, she's so stupid. And it's like, no, she's making a very funny joke. You just don't get it, because in your brain you can't fathom a woman like having a different perspective or being sarcastic and like being funny and shit like that. That's why like all these dudes would be like, the funniest woman I know is my mom. And it's like, really? That's the funniest woman you know? Okay.
Yeah, is it the only woman that you've like listened to?
Listen to or
Yeah.
respect. It's funny how those correlate. The funniest woman and the only woman you've ever really listened to is the funniest one that you know.
For a dollar, name a woman. Yeah, exactly. And I think that was something in reading this that I felt like there's, I don't know. I think I felt like there's a degree of like, what is the best thing that this book can say is that black people are people too. And I think it's like sometimes is that the bar? Like,
I mean, that it for a lot of white people, that is the lesson they need to learn. A lot of people, like, and I commend Mark Twain because I feel like a lot of people learn that lesson too late. Like, I mean, look at the reaction in like 2020. It was like some people, like, something like they were plugged into the wall of like finally, and like they saw all these different things, and it's like, you didn't know this. You didn't know we were upset about, like, to act like this is such a surprise. But if you aren't really tapped in or really care or never made to know certain things, then yeah, it is a surprise. So for a lot of people, that's why I said like this, I think, this is a required reading for a certain person, because a lot of people need that lesson very early on, or it could snowball into worse things later.
That's true. Yeah, there's it's I think I was maybe most surprised in this by the character of Tom Sawyer, who I did want to hit in the head with a hammer. That guy sucks. You said you didn't get to the end of the book, so I wonder sort of where that stopped. Did Tom Sawyer come back by the end of where you were
I know
reading?
he does come back, but I didn't make it to that part.
Jim is on this family farm, locked up, waiting for someone to come take him back to the widow to return him to slavery. And
Yep.
Tom comes in, orchestrates 700 elaborate plans to get Jim out, but is always like, "No, we can't do it. We can't do it as soon as possible, as easy as possible." And at the end, is revealed like he knew the whole time that Jim was actually free.
He knew the whole time he was free. And I think that's a good thing to have in the book because it's applicable to get today where like I think a lot of like white people they don't want change to happen unless they can be like the hero to make it happen. I used to make this joke about like every white person wants to be Martin Luther King, but they don't want what happened to Martin Luther King to happen to them. But it's like you see that in like labor movements and progressive movements and things like that, where like white people center themselves and want to be front and center and make the statements and talk loud and everything. But usually it's just kind of like, can you just like listen for like a second? And I think him, Tom Sawyer, doing that of like, I want to live this John Brown type fantasy right now is like definitely plays into that a lot.
Yeah, there's some great sequences at the beginning of before they get to even the character of Jim, of Tom and Huck trying to have this gang. And they're saying,
When they
like,
make
well,
blood.
Huck can't. Exactly. They're like, Huck can't be in the gang because he doesn't have any family that we can threaten to kill. I think I just kept getting surprised by like how. I think the books that succeed as children's books are the ones that don't treat children as children. They understand. Sorry, this is my cat.
Oh, trust me, I get it. I'm surprised one hasn't walked in on me yet, so I get it.
Don't know what's wrong with this one, but I like Huck's home life, quote unquote, is terrifying. Huck gets kidnapped by his alcoholic father who tries to murder him, and it just happens. It's just like. I didn't like that, so I left. It's so matter of fact.
Because I think he even said like he wrote an adult book with just child characters in it. And so it's just like you said, like it definitely doesn't treat you like a child just from like how the violence is in the book, like all the shit. So
Yes, Tom gets shot at the end as they are fleeing, and it's one of those moments where Jim is like, I'm not gonna leave this poor child who's been shot in the leg.
I would have took off.
Exactly. I was really rooting for Tom Sawyer to die. But yeah, I think like the moments where Huck is struck with Jim's humanity is by Jim sort of like doing the most basic things that we would expect of other people. Like Jim is upset when he thinks Huck dies. He is going to stand by a child who has been shot and like make sure that child gets medical care. Like meanwhile, Tom is like, this is the best part is that I got shot. This is what makes it a really good story.
Sure. He was Jackass before Jackass. He was just in there for the thrill, you know?
Yeah. And it's all sort of wonderful and bewildering. And I think I'm very glad that that I revisited it because I think every time I look at it and every time I look into it a little bit closer and a little bit deeper, I think I find a little bit more in it. And I think it's easy. I think I then wanted to write it off because I wanted to be contrary in everything. That's just sort of what I got out of life. But it is a classic for a reason. I mean, people say that this is the first American novel and the best American novel.
It's definitely an early American novel. I'll give it that.
Is an American novel. That part cannot be disputed.
I also think it also speaks to America that like we're so stuck in like archaic traditions and values and all this type of thing that we'll say that a book written in 1884 is the best American novel. And it's like, no, it has some good lessons, but at the end of the day, it still has like a limiting worldview. Like you said, like Mark Twain is a genius for his time, you know, like he was about as progressive of an author as a white man in the 1870s to 80s could be. You know what I'm saying? So like for that time, sure. But like in 2024, when we have so many things that we haven't healed from and fixed and all this type of stuff, I couldn't say that about this book, that it's the best one.
No, I think it's like, yeah, like a very good starting point.
Yeah, it's a
And
great starting point. And that's America in a nutshell. We did something good. Let's do something else good in 100 years. Like that's
yes. Yeah, it's sort of, I think for us, like I think it's a great book to be in like a college class maybe and talking about like American literature as a continuum. But I think if we're trying to teach ninth graders that like people of other races are also people, I think we could do some, there's a better book for
Could
that
do something different.
purpose.
I'm sure something else has been written within the last 40 years that we could use.
Oh yeah. There's, I know my reading of it in ninth grade. I think the big focus was like kids could not understand the vernacular.
Right. I feel like kids would in my class would get in trouble all the time for laughing. Like that was like one of the main things. Like pe kids would like always be laughing at the shit and they would get in trouble. So like I feel like we didn't even get through most of the stuff we were supposed to get through during the day and everything.
Yeah, and it is funny. Like Twain is a comedian. He is one of the earliest comedians that we know of in the US and is, I think, like those Tom Sawyer sequences in the beginning are extremely funny, which is why it sort of can be disorienting to be both, to be this sort of funny Hardy Boys kind of thing and also be dealing with some of the biggest issues of the 1880s and of the 2020s. And yeah, like you said, masterful to ride that line. It's a great book. Why do we read like some of the greatest works of literature at some of our youngest ages? I think is something that I keep coming up against in lit education.
High school is the one time you can make people do stuff. Everybody remembers the books they read in like 9th, 10th, 11th grade. But like a lot of people, one, don't go to college, can't remember, can't tell you what they read in college, drop out of college. Most people don't read a book after they're out of school. So like 9th through 12th grade or even like middle school is kind of like the one time we can kind of force everybody to kind of be educated, to kind of read and like people take things from their childhood in high school and use those as moral principles later. So I feel like that's why we read like The Crucible and other types of shit during high school, because you're not gonna read. I know for certain, like this is the first book I've kind of read in forever. I know that's a terrible thing to say, but I don't
No,
read
but it's true.
it. It doesn't interest me. I don't want to read. Like I just don't. So like I have to read enough for work, and so like most people don't read leisurely. Like in fact, when I do see somebody reading leisurely, like it freaks me out a little bit. Like what the fuck are you doing?
You
But
don't have
most,
something else to do.
yeah, you don't have anything to do. Like you have time to read. What the fuck? So I think that's why we read these classics when we're like 14, 15, because they know like we're never gonna read them in other places.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Absolutely.
Yeah, especially where I'm from. Don't nobody read in Mississippi.
Is there anything that you know you wanted to talk about that we haven't covered?
We definitely talked about kind of like the historics around it, which I thought was honestly more interesting than the book.
Yeah. I think it's frustrating because there's so much that isn't the good parts, you know? The big story I feel like around this book is always the controversy is the N-word, is it being banned from various schools, not because it's subversive, but just because of a single word. And so I know people have published versions. I mean, like you talked about with your teacher just saying, say African American, even though that is so radically a different, fundamentally changes the meaning of it, changes the characters, changes because that's a term with a degree of respect to it that the N-word certainly doesn't have. People have published versions where they do that, where they take it out or they replace it with something.
There's a version that they replaced it with slave, which I feel like still not it, but I guess the closest thing.
Yeah. But like you said, still not the essence of it. Yeah. I think in the end, in the very end, they talk about because at the end of Tom Sawyer, the first book, this is technically a sequel. At the end of the first book, Tom and Huck both get like $6,000, which today is something like $200,000. After, I'm getting a screenshot because I know I wrote this down. After Jim has been locked in this shed for months on end so that Tom can have fun, they pay him $40 for his time, which today is $1,300. And in that's like that's I think maybe the hardest sequence because Twain is really like, how poorly can we treat Jim? We're gonna send snakes in, we're gonna send wasps in, he's gonna get eaten by rats, he's gonna have to write in his own blood, even though he doesn't know how to write. And just one thing after another, and we're going to give him less than 1 month's rent for it. It's such a difficult thing to because it is incredible and it does have shortcomings. And I feel like maybe we're not a country good with those gray areas where things can be both.
Not.
But you would consider it required reading, right?
Yeah, I think it's re I think it should be required reading for white kids under 15. I don't think anybody else needs to read this. But they.
I think you're 100% right. And with that, it's like, how do you say that in a classroom? You can't, separate everyone. But yeah, there are. I know the year after this, we read Beloved by Toni Morrison. And one of the best books I've ever read, one of my favorite authors. And I know no one got that. Like, I know it was so past any of our levels. Like, would you get out of high school and ever read another Toni Morrison book? Or if you hadn't read that, ever even know who she is? Probably not.
Yeah, it's meant as an introducing point. 'Cause I mean, yeah, we read The Crucible in high school, and you how many dudes I grew up with are still very misogynistic, most of them. And it's like, but you read The Crucible, so you shouldn't. You learned the lesson. It's like, that's not how it works.
No,
It
yeah.
opens your brain, and then you have life to actually apply these things to it. And if you don't do that, you don't do that, you know.
All you can do is plant the seeds, and everything else is, yeah, it's you have to hope that everything else comes with it. It's so hard to be a teacher. Gosh, they've got a really
Absolutely.
hard task on them. But I'm so glad to have revisited this. I think it's so much more than I ever remembered. And I feel like we should be asking this much of children's books. Maybe not of every children's book, but
Yeah, some of them.
absolutely to be both. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for bringing this in. I think like when you asked for it, I did kind of be like, oh, okay. But it was so worth it. And I think that reluctance probably just comes from like there's going to be a lot here. There's going to be uncomfortable parts, which the best art is.
Because I think he was really just trying to write something that was just gonna grab people's attention, because it was just so, especially like if it's uncomfortable to read now, imagine cracking that book
Oh,
open in
yeah.
1884. Like, there was probably so many people, it's like, oh, my child is not reading this. This kid is running away with this slave. No, we are not reading this. Which probably and he probably knew that, which probably made a lot of be like, oh, my parents don't want me to read this book. I'm gonna read this book. And I think he in a way was able to put all of those seeds in this story that was just gonna very much just like rock people's world. Like it'd be like if somebody wrote a story now about something in Gaza and like this essentially happening in the Gaza Strip right now. It would definitely make a lot of people feel uncomfortable. It would make some people excited, and a lot of people would be like, well, we're not reading that book because it's such a sensitive time, because this is literally happening right now. So like that's when I so I would think of like, what if somebody literally wrote about what's going on right now? That's what he did, and he made it for children, which is crazy. So yeah.
And made it funny and exciting. And it is, I mean, it's in the title, it's an adventure. Thank you so much for bringing back. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Well, is there anything you'd like to plug? I think that's all I've got to say.
Yeah, if you're in LA, November 22nd, I run a show with Don't Tell called Who All Gonna Be There, and it's a secret show, the lineup secret, but you know I'll be the host, and we got really really funny comedians out here, and we had a really fun time. We got chicken wings selling outside, so it's a really fun time. Art gallery downtown. Link in my bio for the tickets, or you can go on donttell.com. It's the show in downtown LA on November 22nd. So hit me up on Instagram, the Niles Abston Show, or Twitter at Niles 100.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Hi, Jaren.
Thank you so much to Niles. The book I mentioned, James by Percival Everett, was a finalist for the Booker Prize. The winner was announced today. It was not the winner, which frankly really surprised me. But check out that book, it's fantastic. You can find me everywhere at Erin R. Bowles. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to buymeacoffee.com/required reading. Next week, Taylor Ortega joins me to discuss Sweep by Kate Tiernan. It's witches, baby. All right, I'll see you then.